In this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Helen Minasian. She's the director of the Redwood Valley Outdoor Educational Project north of Ukiah, California, a small town in a long, narrow valley that's been occupied by the Pomo people for about 11,000 years. Until about 150 years ago, when Europeans and other settlers from out of the area came, the Ukiah Valley, the Yokeo Valley as it's known in the Pomo language, was really kind of natural and uninterrupted with pavement, waterworks, and mechanical sounds. And then all of that came. In preparation for today's visit with Helen Minasian, I was looking at a book called The Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder by Richard Louv. Richard mentions in his book that parents have the power to ensure that their daughter or son will not be the last child in the woods. In his book is the first step towards the nature-child reunion. And I think to some extent that is what the Redwood Valley Outdoor Educational Project is about. I'd like to welcome Helen Minasian to tell us about the project.
Thank you, Barry. I'm really happy to be here. And the Redwood Valley Outdoor Education Project started about 10 years ago through the efforts of Jennifer Harris and Spencer Brewer and some other folks that were very, very concerned that students in our schools were not having the opportunity to learn about how our planet works.
Or, in a way, perhaps connect with nature. Sitting in a classroom looking at pictures is a number of steps removed.
Exactly. And a few visionaries like Jennifer realized that there was a possibility that we could offer this kind of experience on some property that the school district had in Redwood Valley, 45 acres of woodland.
I think it's important to note about Jennifer Harris that she was, before she retired, had a career as a science teacher at Ukiah High School, and she lived very close to the Redwood Valley Outdoor Education Project property.
She did, and she was not only a science teacher, she was an outstanding and noted science teacher, the teacher of the year for science on the state level, and a visionary in many ways.
So what does this project do? How do children get there? What do they do when they're there?
So children who come to the Redwood Valley Outdoor Education Project come on a school bus usually. And we have a class visiting the Outdoor Education Project every day during the fall and spring. And we have particular programs for particular age groups. And each program is designed to teach children an ecological concept and also to give them a chance to connect with nature and to also connect with us, the staff at the Outdoor Education Project, who have a great excitement about nature.
What are some of the ecological concepts that the children see?
One of the big concepts that we try to connect kids to is the idea of community, and that we have our own communities that we come from, and these communities exist because people live together, because it's a good way to get services, to not only have a place where we enjoy living, but to have a place where we can go to the doctor, we can go to the store, we can get an education. And natural systems are much like that. They exist because of the individuals that live in those systems. And each of the plants and animals that live in a natural community bring something to that community. They bring a service to that community.
What would be some examples? I have an image of an anthill as you're talking.
Yeah, well, an anthill is a good example. Ants, they have the very important job of being soil aerators and soil mixers and seed spreaders. And one of the programs that we do at the Outdoor Education Project is actually a forest community study where students are involved in proving that a community exists. in the forest. And so one of the ways that they prove that is to do a census of the plants and animals that live there. And so they actually gather information. They visit the paths, the streets, and more or less interview the animals about where they live, what their job is, how they help out the whole community.
Well, let's talk about that. Obviously, there's the attention span on the part of the interviewer, and there's the ability to communicate the question to the interviewee and understand the answer. How do you put that together?
Well, we set it up, and that is why the project has a trained teacher, which is me, and Hannah Bird also works with me at the site.
Who I also want to say is the post-production manager for Radio Curious.
Yes, and Hannah brings a lot of experience in environmental education from Scotland, where she worked in education about dolphins and whales. We set up experiences that hook kids. The forest community, for example, starts with a sign that says the property is going to be sold. And building permits will soon be issued unless there's somebody who is objecting.
So that's a real sign. That's a real possibility.
It's a possibility. The property has been, it's always a possibility that the project could be sold, that property. The school district could sell it, though they seem to be very committed to the project. But for us, it's a hook. And the kids say, well, that would be terrible, you know. And we say, well, you know, I think you're right. This property is used. How is it used? And the response will be, well, we use it for education. And the plants and animals use it. They live here. And so we ask the kids to help us prove that a community already exists at the Outdoor Education Project, a community of plants and animals.
So let's go back to the interview that the students have with the plants and animals that are there. What kinds of questions do they present or are suggested to them to present?
We actually, for this particular program, have a census sheet. We turn all the kids into census takers. And their job is to not so much interview the plants and animals, but to take note of who lives there and what job that particular plant or animal does and how many of them are there. So we might be walking through the meadow and stopping and looking at the grass and all the different types of grasses that are there and saying, well, gee, we have grass here. What would the grass's job be? And kids will say, well, you know, there's insects eating the grass. Okay, it's a food producer. That's a very important job for this community. Around the meadow are tall Douglas fir trees and madrone trees and oak trees. What are the job of the trees? Well, they're oxygen producers. They're food producers. Look, there's a squirrel carrying a nut. Those are all proof of what things do. And so as we walk around the education project and we go into the forest, we probably walk, a good mile with the kids. And all along the way, they're finding front doors of houses down in the soil. They're finding birds flying across the sky. They're seeing the plants and animals that live there. And we're noting who they are, what they do, and how many of them are there. When we're through, we end up with quite a list of the community members that live in the forest. And then we look at all the different jobs that they do. And students get to see that, wow, these are really important things. The turkey vultures, they're the garbage men of the forest. They're in charge of making sure dead animals aren't lying around. The fox track that we saw, the fox is a population controller. Without the fox, we're going to have too many rodents. The madrone tree with its berries is providing food, while the cedar waxwing that we saw is eating the berries and carrying those berries somewhere. Its job is a transporter. It transports seeds around the community And when it goes to the bathroom somewhere, that seed gets planted and it grows, complete with fertilizer. The aha, the oh my goodness, look at this, is going off in the kids, and you can see it. It's very exciting.
What are the ages of the students that participate in the project?
6 years old up through middle school, and with an emphasis of first grade through sixth.
So they come on an annual basis?
They come on an annual basis. One day a year, each year, they come to the project for a day, and they stay for about a five-hour program at the project.
And that's when they do their inventory and take their census?
That's one program that we have. And that program we do with fourth, fifth, or sixth grade. We have many other programs that cover and emphasize some of the other ecological concepts that we're working on.
So as the project director, Helen Manasian, you mentioned that the children have been coming since the first grade and they go through middle school. Do you have kids who have come each year of the time that they've been in school?
We have children coming each year, and each time they come, they build on the experiences that they had the year before, and it's quite exciting.
What sort of things have you seen among the children as they build their experiences?
Well, one of the interesting things that I've seen in doing the project for the last 9 years is when I first started, we would be on a walk through the forest, and invariably, there would be some little boy in the line that was shooting squirrels out of the trees with his hands and just going, bang, bang. And I would think, gee, you know, it's really obvious that this child has had no connection with a forest other than from maybe a hunting perspective. And now I rarely see that. And what I see are kids that are really excitedly saying, wow, you know, last year when we were here, we saw a squirrel jump from tree to tree, and that was really, really neat. This time, we saw a red-tailed hawk swoop down and try to get that squirrel. That was exciting. I have a story, actually, I think that really demonstrates how concepts can build. In third grade, we do a program at the Outdoor Education that focuses on food chains and how food chains work. And so the students are involved in identifying different parts of the food chain, from the sun munchers, the plants that get their energy from the sun, to the plant munchers, the animals that get their energy from eating the plants, and the animal munchers. And we go on a munching hike, and they identify, you know, signs of munching and find evidence of things that have been eaten, and they keep track of how many of each thing they find. And pretty soon they realize that the most munching that's going on are plants. So plants are munching the sun. That's where they get their energy. So this is really a program that focuses on energy flow. When we're getting to the end of this program, we always sit in the middle of the forest, and we ask the students what they think the secret of life is. And we get lots of different answers. And so usually we're trying to get the kids to think about what they've experienced and to kind of come to the conclusion that we need a lot of plants because the plants are the base of the food chain, and that the plants need certain things. And one day we're sitting in our circle in the forest, and I ask the question, what is the secret of life?
Before you answer that question, I want to mention that in this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Helen Manasian. She's the director of the Redwood Valley Outdoor Education Project on land that's owned by the Ukiah Unified School District, about 7-8 miles north of the town of Ukiah in Mendocino County. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. And Helen, what is the secret of life?
Well, according to this little freckle-faced boy, he says, rocks are the secret of life. And I immediately knew what he was saying because the year before he had been participating in a program where we learned about soil. And I didn't think he'd be able to explain it. So I said, well, what do you mean rocks are the secret of life? And he said, well, It's really simple. Last year, we learned that most of what's in soil comes from broken down rocks. And trees need soil in order to live. So rocks start the whole thing. Then we get soil. Then we get all the trees growing in the soil. And then the plant munchers have something to eat. And the animal munchers eat the plant munchers. It all starts with rocks. That's the secret of life. So he was making connections, and he was so excited, and I was excited too. It was a really
fun
experience.
Sounds like you have a future scientist there on that little trip.
Definitely.
The children who are afraid or who come from families that are afraid to go out into the forest, where they're not so much in Mendocino County where we live, but in other areas, how do you lure them into this kind of adventure?
That's a good question. We do get kids that are afraid, and we get parents that are afraid to let their kids come. And I think that the program's been going long enough now where they hear about what happens out there. So they realize it's a fun thing. And we probably have 200 or 300 parents that come to the Outdoor Education Project with kids. But we lure them with fun, with excitement. And often they get to do something that they've never done before. I had a little boy who was 6 years old. It was kind of a rainy day, and a first grade class was at the project. And we're out in our parking area, and we've been doing some activities before we go into the forest. And this little six-year-old takes my hand, and he says, "Mother Nature," which is what the kids call me. We all have nature names at the Outdoor Education Project, including the kids. His name was Banana Slug. I said, "Yeah, Banana Slug." Here he is, his little yellow boots. He says, "When are we going into the forest?" I said, "Pretty soon. Have you ever been into a forest before?" And he looks at me with his big eyes. He says, "No." I said, "What do you think you're going to see there?" He said, "Monkeys?" He had no idea what was in a forest. He had never been in a forest before. And though he didn't seem to be afraid, he was more curious. It was a new experience. And I think that's probably what, you know, maybe creates some trepidation in some of the kids and some of the parents, is that it's a new experience for them.
So let's talk about the money. How is this funded? I have some familiarity with the Ukiah Unified School District. I was a trustee about 25 years ago, and I remember speaking in opposition to selling this property. But I also know that the funds that the school district has are less now than they were. And with the student population diminishing, they may be less in the future. How are the costs of the project paid, the Redwood Valley Outdoor Education Project?
When the project first started, it was with the agreement that it would be self-supporting. We could use the school district property for the project and provide outdoor environmental education programs for the school district, but it couldn't cost the district anything. So our project is funded by the community, and we do a considerable amount of fundraising. We have some grants that we write. We also have an anonymous donor that has been generous enough to support a teacher at the site for the last 9 years.
Which is you.
And that is me, yes. And that's really allowed us to develop programs that tie to the science standards and district curriculum, classroom curriculum.
The project also sponsors a film series, which brings outdoor education to our community, not by going and seeing, but looking at the secondary, the films. And there will be a film series this spring. Can you tell us about that? When, where, what we can look at?
Well, this film series will take place starting February 19th is the first night. It's six, I like to call them Wild Fridays. Six consecutive Fridays of international wildlife films from the International Wildlife Film Festival in Missoula, Montana. And we started this to raise money for the project. The value of our International Wildlife Film Festival is that it introduces people to the Redwood Valley Outdoor Education Project and what it does. And I think it shows them that we have something that the whole community should treasure in the project and support. I think our selections this year are some of the most exciting that we've shown since this is our fourth year of films. And it's a really good variety of habitats and ecosystems that we'll be visiting with the films. The first film, Mountains of the Monsoon, takes place in the Western Ghats, India, and takes us into the mountains with a photographer that is a world-renowned Indian photographer. And so we not only see some of his photography, we see movies of the plants and animals that live there. And it's a very biologically diverse area, one of the most diverse areas in the world. Another film that's really going to be interesting is Lost Land of the Jaguar, which takes place in Guyana and takes us into the rainforest with some scientists that actually, in the course of making the film, discover new species that have never been filmed before, and we get to see those species.
What kind of critters are they?
You'll have to come and see. If you come to the film festival on February 26th, you get to visit the Lost Land of the Jaguar. The Great Salmon Run is my favorite because it's just absolute amazing look at a migration of millions and millions of salmon up a river in the Pacific Northwest, and really shows the ecological diversity that's there because of the salmon. And we get to watch grizzly bears hunt for salmon and also see what the salmon go through to swim thousands of miles up this river to their spawning ground. The film series ends with a look at our Earth in a film called Earth that is a film that shows the diversity of life on our Earth from one pole to the next. And we get to see polar bears coming out of hibernation. We get to see whales in their migration back with their young. And we get to travel across our planet and get a planetary view from way out in space right down to the smallest things. It's a film that got an award for cinematography. It's a magnificent film. The films give people a look at some parts of our planet that they would never get to see. And when we talked about starting an annual wildlife film festival, the idea was to excite people about our Earth and to get them to care, which is what we do with kids when they come to the project. We want people to care about their Earth and care enough to change the way they live on the Earth. These films go a long way to give us that feeling that we are on a very, very special planet.
And that is every Friday at the Ukiah City Council Chambers, beginning February 19th at 6:30, with some music and a chance to visit, and the films at 7. Well, Helen Manasian, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious, and I have a couple of questions, and one is new. You were telling us a little while ago about your 6-year-old student's interpretation of The Secret of Life, and I'd like to know what you plan to do with the rest of your one precious life.
Well, I am actually doing what I love with my one precious life, and my plan is to continue doing that at the Outdoor Education Project and on our ranch in Potter Valley, where we're hoping to invite students and people of all ages to learn about the ecology of an oak woodland and life on a working ranch.
And can you tell us about an aha moment where all of a sudden concepts or ideas came together on the work that you do or any other experience where that may have occurred?
Well, in the work that I do, I have lots of aha moments, and that's what makes it so exciting. The other day, we were in a classroom doing a flight school program, which is a program that focuses on birds. And part of the program involves students doing a scientific investigation about owls and finding out what the most common prey of a barn owl is. And they do this experiment where they take apart a barn owl pellet. When a barn owl eats its prey. It doesn't digest the hair and bones, and it regurgitates those. So we have quite a collection of barn owl pellets that have all been sanitized. And the kids get to take apart a barn owl pellet. And it's just like Christmas. It's like opening a present. And from the little bones that they find in the barn owl pellet, they identify the prey of the barn owl. And we keep track of that so we can identify what the most common prey is. Well, we were finished with this activity, and this little boy comes up, and he has his little petri dish display case, which they make. And he had all his bones all laid out. And he had a little shrew head, and he had a little skull of a vole. And he also had rib bones and back bones and tail bones. And he holds this up to me and he goes, "Mother Nature, this is the most fun day of school that I have ever had. I just want you to know that."
That's a pretty precious moment.
It was a very special moment for me.
And Helen Manasian, is there a book that you could recommend?
I do have to recommend Last Child in the Woods. It's a incredible book that really brings out how important connection with nature is. And seeing kids at the Outdoor Education Project experience nature for the first time, some of them, and listen to nature with their hearts, makes me realize what an important book this is for people to read and to work nature into their experiences with their children.
Helen Manasian, director of the Redwood Valley Outdoor Education Project, thanks for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry.
Helen Magruder Manasian is the director of the Redwood Valley Outdoor Education Project, located in Redwood Valley, California. The book that she recommends is The Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder by Richard Louvre. This interview was recorded in the studios of Radio Curious on February 8, 2010. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available on our website, www.radiocurious.org. You can also subscribe to the Radio Curious podcast by clicking on our website. Our programs are also available in CD format. To get a copy, visit our website, radiocurious.org, for further details. And we appreciate your thoughts and ideas about our programming and do enjoy hearing from you. Our address is Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our email address is curious@radiocurious.org, and the phone number is 707-462-6541. Our programs are recorded in our studios in Ukiah, California. Hannah Bird heads our post-production staff. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Thank you for joining us.